is 9 a.m. on February 27th, 2013, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And it's a lovely morning.
It sure is.
It's Central Atlanta Progress Day here at Business Radio
X.
Dan Williams representing in the house.
That's right.
And with him today, Dagmar Epstein, a fellow, an architect from the Epstein Group. She's very, very highly acclaimed architect.
Yes, prestigious and renowned. And we're thrilled to have her in the studio with us this morning.
Thank you.
And as always, we're going to start out the day with some headlines and some, you know, topics of controversy.
That's right, Dana. There's been a lot of interesting news of late, and I'm always curious to hear your opinions on all of the goings on.
Well, you know,
really. Come on. So it's interesting. Last night, I was at book club, and we're actually discussing a book that was written in 1951, which is not something that we typically do, but the book is called The Disappearance, and it's by Philip Wiley. And I think, though he was not really considered a sci-fi writer, it's sort of a sci-fi-ish book. And the premise is this, and I'm getting to a point here, people, trust me. But the premise is basically that this random day, back in 1951, the men and women are going about their business, and poof, all the women disappear. And the first chapter is from the male perspective, all the women are gone. Well, it turns out it's a parallel universe kind of thing. So from the women's perspective, poof, all the men are gone. And so then the second chapter is from the women's perspective, and the chapters go back and forth. And it's very philosophical, sort of about what women would do without men and how they would get along, and what men would do without women and how they would get along. And are we the same or are we different? And I think the point ultimately, though there are many points in the book, and it's very, very philosophical, a little bit hard to chew through, is that we are different. We are different. And it's funny because even in 1951, some of the things that he was writing about, there's a comment in there about, this is a side note, but there's a comment in there about women spending billions of dollars, I think, or perhaps he said millions, at the beauty parlor, which obviously we don't even call it that anymore, to ward off aging, right? And that has only gotten worse. So from 1951, you know, we didn't even think that that's what they were thinking at the time.
Right.
But they were.
That's
even
funny.
Then. But anyway, my point
so
is
taken to an extreme, those tendencies, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really interesting book.
It really was interesting because, of course, and not to get too graphic, but of course, the men went right to like, well, what do we do about sex? And we have to replace this. What are we going to do? You know, and the women were like trading housekeeping secrets and figuring out how to, because they didn't know how to run the power plants and stuff. So they had a lot of work to do. The men had everything was working. This is 1950s, of course, a little different now, but the women had
business to... Business was taken care of, but the home life,
correct.
Not so much.
Right, and the women were like figuring out how to take care of business. You know, they had the home stuff down. So anyway, and also they just were like, oh, the men are gone, thank goodness. kidding, Dan.
Hilarious.
Anyway, it did sort of intrigue me because I, you know, the headlines over the last several weeks, I've just been noticing a lot of sort of controversy, if you will. You know,
around the sexes,
yes,
at work.
Yes. And there were two stories in particular that jumped out. One, I think everybody has sort of read about, which is the CEO of Yahoo. One of the first women to get to that level at that size company, who, while pregnant, decided that blanket statement, no more working from home for Yahoo employees. So it's been quite controversial because, you know, Yahoo's position, I think, essentially is that for them right now, more work will get done with people together in the room.
Right. That the team component is right now essential for their company.
Correct.
And what they're trying to achieve.
But to make a blanket statement like that, a lot of women, especially, although I think people in general.
Well, at a time when so many other companies are going in the opposite direction.
Correct.
When telecommuting has become the norm at many Fortune 500 companies.
Well, and there's so many reasons for it beyond, I mean, work-life balance being, I would say, number one. As somebody who works, as I do, you know, on a freelance basis, I have a very flexible schedule and I can be home in the middle of the day to let the dog out. I can run to the dry cleaner and, you know, right. Having those kinds of, and I don't have small children at home anymore, but having that kind of flexibility, especially when you have kids, can be critical for people, men and women. So I think it's sort of odd.
Well,
move on her part.
Yes. I mean, those types of policies, I think, ultimately end up shaping the culture of the company. And that, I think Marissa Mayer is definitely feeling like the culture needs a reshaping. And, I mean, she's there to shake things up and to turn that company around.
Right.
So that requires drastic measures at times. But it's interesting.
Well,
I agree.
You know,
I don't know that it's the right move from a leadership standpoint.
Well, I think the problem is, you know, growing up when I did, I hate to date myself every time I get on the air, but I seem to always do it. I always have to talk about my age. Damn it. Anyway, I'm going to be 46 next week. And, you know, growing up when I did, there was still the women's movement. I'm doing the air quotes, the women's movement. And I was too young, but women, my mother, you know, was still in the whole ERA and women need, and, you know, but now it's sort of like we take for granted that we think anyway, that we have sort of the same rights and privileges as men, and the glass ceiling has sort of disappeared, and we can become, you know, fellows as architects, and we can be recognized, and we can do great projects, and, you know, we can sort of
top. Yeah.
Right. And we can be the leaders of Yahoo and whatnot. Right. But at the same time, there are still people who do not see us that way and who will not hire a woman because she's of childbearing age and they don't want to give, they assume she's going to have to take more time off and things like that. Those things still do happen. It's just a little less talked about. And so when a powerful woman like that comes out in the forefront and sort of takes something away that I think helped create more of a balance between men and women.
Right.
Because now dad can go to the soccer game if he can work from home, right? Or he can watch Joey if Joey's sick, right? If nobody can work from home anymore, somehow it's going to fall back on the women. I'm just saying. It's going to fall back on the women to take the day off. Dad's not going to do it. I don't know. And it's just also, and I want to bring Sheryl Sandberg into the conversation because she has a new book coming out. Everybody knows that Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg, who, by the way, happens to be a friend of one of my cousins, like a good friend. They went to college together and they're buddies. So I sort of have a little bit of the inside knowledge of her. And I think she's
degrees of separation?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to count.
Yeah. I think she's, from what I know, from what I've heard about her personally, she's a wonderful person and, you know, very giving and wants to share the wealth in terms of helping other women in their careers and all of that, which prompted her to write this new book, which comes out, I believe, next month, called Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead. It's coming out March 11th. And one of the things that's interesting, and again, as a little bit of a side note, is she's actually making a call to women to essentially have these groups, these Lean In groups, she's calling them, sort of support groups for women trying to get ahead in their careers. So the thing is, if people don't do it, it's going to be like egg on her face. It's one thing to just put a book out there. Either people buy it or they don't, you know, whatever. You can blame that on the publishers and the publicists and the cover and whatever else. But in the book, she's calling for this action to happen in the communities.
Right.
And if it doesn't happen,
create a movement.
Yeah.
But somebody at that level of influence, I mean, no matter what, there's going to be some level of movement.
Though, not unlike, what's this Yahoo's woman's name? Marissa?
Marissa Mayer.
Mayer. I don't have that in front of me. For some reason, my printer printed everything but that story, the one I really wanted to talk about. Anyway, she also is getting criticized for sort of speaking from a lofty perch. Like, easy for her to say. She was successful right out of college. First of all, she went to Harvard. So right off the bat, she had privileges that not all women have. Then she was successful right out of college. I mean, hooked up with arguably the most successful guy of this generation, this youngster generation out there right now, whatever they're calling them these days. This kids. But anyway, you know, so she's immediately successful, right? So for her and like big time successful, like this cousin of mine that she's friendly with, she takes her girlfriends, including this cousin of mine, 10 of them on a, you know, bajillion dollar private jet trip to the beach, whatever, when she wants a getaway, right?
Just, you know.
And she has every right to do that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
However, the point is, from that lofty perch where she can afford whatever she needs to make her life easier to pursue her career, we don't all have that. You know, I'm sure Dagmar was not flying around on her private jet. Maybe she was.
But what I know about Marissa Mayer is that she came back to work 2 weeks after she had her baby.
Mm-hmm. Which is
so
also
the other side.
That's mm-hmm. not. I don't think that's good either, to be honest.
Well, but apparently she likes to have a good life, but she also is very ambitious and likes to be a leader in her company.
Right, but there's two things I think that happen when you get to that level. First of all, you have every. That's how she got where she is, right? By doing things like that. Having a baby and coming back 2 weeks later, which frankly, I was still like sleepwalking 2 weeks later. I don't think I could. I would have not done anyone any good if I had gone back to work. However, she also has to be a role model at that level. And by putting out there that you can go back to work after 2 weeks, what is she doing to all the women who need the 6 weeks or the 12 weeks or who want it to be with their baby? And again, who can't afford round-the-clock nannies to make that easier for them? I don't know. I mean, I think that's the controversy.
I think it's the same message that she's sending when she says that people shouldn't telecommute. So there's something that she's trying to do with the company. She's trying to bring people more into the office.
Yeah. I mean, I see it as her saying work is the number one priority, not family, not babies, not personal time, not going to the dry cleaner, Dana. You know, work is the number one priority. And I don't think a lot of people feel that way anymore.
Which, and it does sort of strike against this sort of notion of the Silicon Valley ethos, right? Where more flexibility, more telecommuting, more, you know, you get to work and there's a ping pong table and yeah, but and maybe they have you work longer hours, but you're more comfortable at work when you're there, and then you may have more time off or
right
or just
right.
This whole notion of flexibility, and it seems like she's kind of trying to get back to this model of more rigidity. I don't know, you know, from the perspective of, you know, put on CAP hat and, you know, sustainability, you know, this whole notion of telecommuting is important in the world of transportation options and trying to build in a more robust portfolio of transportation options for a workforce in a city, in a metropolitan region. You know, our transportation folks in our office work hard to help companies provide options for telecommuting and incentives and programs that help them customize those to work for them. So, you know, Dagmar may have from sustainability perspective some thoughts on this, but yeah, you know, they go beyond the social variables, the household and the quality of life for a family variables. There's also sort of macro sustainability things that we have to think about when we think about telecommuting, and it's just one of the many options that we try to advance and you know make companies understand that, you know, really a lot of the things that we do in the office, you know, you can do them from home.
You know what? I'm really glad you brought that up, because I do get sometimes sidetracked by the issues that make me angry,
right?
You know, but that's a really good point. And there are that I started to say when we got into the conversation that there were a multitude of reasons why telecommuting is good, and that is absolutely way up there. The people that have to get into work would love it if the people that didn't would get off the roads.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. And yeah, smog, I mean, environmentally, from a roads, you know, a building standpoint, traffic standpoint, I mean, all of those reasons, absolutely 100% important in terms of telecommuting. If everybody were to stop it, can you imagine what the roads would be
sure.
like? Oh, my goodness. In cities like this, where our public transportation isn't quite as robust as it could be, though
sure.
it's getting there today, even more,
yeah, we'll have some, yeah.
You know, it would make it even, it would be incredible here. It's going to be interesting, too, though, because as you said, I know some of the other – I had a friend, actually, who lived here originally and then moved out to the West, the wild, wild West, and worked for Microsoft for a while and Google and Yahoo, all three of them. And I think is back with Google now, but left Google for a while and went to Yahoo and then something like that. Anyway, the bottom line is from even at that time, which was years ago, Yahoo was not a great place to work from what I heard. Mm-hmm. And this is only going to make that worse, which means it's going to be harder for them to attract top talent.
Maybe. It may. At the same time, they may be developing another sort of collaborative type culture that
people might, love.
You know, that people love and or a certain type of people
yeah,
love, you
maybe.
Know, that attracts
right.
a certain type of maybe it attracts younger professionals that that, you know, don't yet have kids. I mean, I can speak for, you know, my generation, the Gen Ys, we're not having kids. We're having less kids and we're having them later. And, you know, it does, you know, being in a collaborative environment with other people, you know, I think that's a, you know, I think that's a benefit of work if you're a young person, and to get to work with other people that are kind of in that creative space. And, you know, we're always talking about building this creative class. So maybe, you know, I'm just guessing, but maybe that's something they're kind of going for, is this Gen Y, you know, 22 to 34 kind of age range where people don't yet have kids, or maybe early in life, you know. But I think for the people that do have kids and are trying to achieve that balance between work and life and parenting, you know, telecommuting can be a helpful thing.
You know, it's interesting.
But a lot of people have done without it. I mean, my parents never had that option.
Right, of course. You know. But there's a couple of interesting points there. And Dagmar's like raising her hand. She's like, Dana, could you shut up for a second? I want to make a point. Please.
Well, at my firm, Epson Group, we have a lot of people in their 20s, and they really like telecommuting. Yeah. So we give them one day a week if their job description allows it. So it needs to be tied to a job description that gives them a deliverable, so we can see what they do that day. So they can't just go off and telecommute and then we don't know what they do that day.
Yeah.
And we find that it's very popular with our employees.
Well, I think that's a really interesting point too, because one of the articles I read about this Yahoo thing was that they questioned why she felt the need to make a blanket statement, and felt that it was probably would have been a better decision if it were sort of manager by manager, department by department, because there are certain jobs that lend themselves to telecommuting in that way. They're measurable, right? And there are also jobs, having had several of these jobs over my lifetime, where you really don't want everyone else around because you need to think. And, you know, I was a programmer for a while, and I've also done jobs where I'm writing. And in both cases, I can't do that while people are talking all around me, and, you know, you need to focus. And so you're trying to isolate yourself anyway. You're got your headphones on and you're trying to like not hear everyone else so you can concentrate. How much easier is that when you're just at home and you're by yourself, you know?
And as part of us allowing telecommuting, we did a lot of research, what's appropriate for telecommuting. And one of the things is you're actually supposed to have childcare when you telecommute, and if you have a child in the house, because a child is just as distracting as your coworkers.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind. If you telecommute and you are at work, you are supposed to work.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting thing about it is what I think happens if you stop allowing, if you have no telecommuting, like in our parents' days, and also they didn't have laptops, right? They didn't, right. They, if they had some paperwork to bring home, maybe they occasionally did, but really work was left at work.
Right. No one's calling you on your cell phone at 9 p.m.
Ding, ding, ding. Right? And so now, if you allow telecommuting, what you're saying is, I expect you to work for me whenever you can, all the time. So yes, I might have childcare even when I'm working from home. But the thing is, I'm going to be up at 6:30 responding to an email before the childcare starts, because I have a relaxed relationship with you, my company, right? And I'm going to work hard for you because you're working hard for me. So I'm going to answer emails at 9. I'm going to take your cell phone call in the middle of the night. You know, so these advancements sort of, in a way, they cause us to work more if handled properly, I think. You know, so I don't know.
Oh, sure. I think most people who telecommute or work from home find they're definitely putting more in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I have a very flexible schedule, but I was up very early this morning checking out the news headlines.
It's a privilege, and you feel like you have to continue to earn it continue to show this is the work I did while you allowed me the flexibility of doing it outside of the office.
Right.
But I mean, I think that's what a good employee will do.
But the other side of that is, when I was younger and I worked in other people's offices, I frequently had to stay till like 9 o'clock at night in the office.
Right.
So now people have the flexibility that they can go home and they can have dinner, they can go work out, and then maybe work another hour, and they can write that hour down as time to the company. So we pay them for the time.
Right. Right.
I'm just thinking about that scenario and my friends, and whether anybody would actually go for that now, you know. It's like
working till 9 o'clock,
working till
9
o'clock in the office. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny that you bring that up, because when I started my career, it was the same way. I had to wear pantyhose every day, and I had to be there by a certain time. They were looking at, if you were late, they dinged you and you had to stay. And if there was work to be done past a certain point, you stayed. But what happened for me was, when I had a baby, I couldn't do that anymore, because I had to be back at the daycare by a certain time to pick up my child, right? So I stopped doing it. And guess what? My career didn't suffer at all. So I think what you figure out pretty quickly is that you do what you have to do. And if you're a good worker and you're good at what you do, if you have to leave at 6, you leave at 6. And the people, you start to figure out that the people that stay till 9 are the young ones who don't know that they can leave at 6 and get away with it.
Right. But at a certain yeah. point, they realize, I think they realize that you don't have to
yeah.
to do that. And,
right.
And the stress of a job like that where you have to work those sorts of hours, I think we're a pretty transient generation anyway. And
right.
At the point that you realize you look around and your friends are leaving the office at, 5 or 6 and, they're going to start looking for another job. I don't see a lot of people. It's sort of, I have friends that are lawyers and some professions where I think it's, but even then,
right.
you do that while you're an associate, but once you're a partner,
no more. Yeah. It's really interesting. The thing is, if she had just quietly said to a couple different departments, you guys can't work from home, no one would have cared. But by making that blanket statement, she brought it to the forefront. And I think, overall, she's sort of going to be on the losing side of that argument. I mean, she'll do whatever she wants with Yahoo, but I think the general public is going to say, no, we want telecommuting. So anyway, moving on.
I think, she continues to be a controversial figure.
Right. And maybe that's her goal.
Yeah.
Maybe that's her goal. I think we've beaten that horse. It's long dead. So moving on. In other sort of women-oriented news, I don't know if you guys saw the story about the woman winning a $600,000 sexual discrimination verdict against UPS, furthering my argument that we are not the same, men and women. So apparently this woman was a driver in a small town, and she was the only full-time woman driver in her town, and she was harassed constantly by the other men. She was, sort of given extra work by the man, like all kinds of things. And she had an accident with her UPS truck and was fired. And so she said, no, I wasn't fired because I've had an accident. Other people have had accidents. They were waiting for an excuse to fire me. And she sued and she won. So we think we're even, but not always. Not always. Dan?
No comment.
I went to liberal arts college. Took some women's studies classes, I can tell you, and I think you're right. I think it's, and maybe it will never be that way. But I do think though, the more data that comes out and the more things that are written, these days, it's women have a lot of advantages in the workplace now that over men. This is a service economy. Women oftentimes do better in the jobs that are out there these days. So. It's an interesting time, but to your point relative to harassment and achieving the C-suite jobs and the glass ceiling, I think that there's certain things that still we haven't overcome relative to gender.
Yeah, I will not disagree with you. There's advantages and disadvantages to both. You don't see the men on the red carpet, for example, being criticized because their nipples are showing. Just saying.
Right.
Really, you don't see them being criticized at all. Whereas, like, every woman, God forbid, she wears the wrong dress.
Sure.
It's like controversy for the following year. Holy cow. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad. I'm happy to be a woman, and I think we need to stick together and kind of still just make sure. Because also there are parts of the country. I mean, one of the things thinking about Anne Hathaway that she said in her acceptance speech was, I hope that stories like the one her character was based on will go away from life in general. And we don't think about stories like that still existing, women struggling like that. But they do. I mean, there are parts of certainly the world, but even in this country where, there's just a lot of problems for women still. So
right.
just because, you're sort of, if you are in the middle class or middle upper class or whatever, you can't sort of forget that not everybody has the same advantages.
Absolutely. As an employer, we're trying to be very non-discriminatory.
Yeah.
So we actually have a staff that has, I think, almost 2/3 women. And we also hire people from all kinds of ethnic backgrounds.
Yeah.
So that has worked really well for us. And it's a responsibility as an employer, but you also have to make sure that the employees treat each other well.
Yeah, absolutely.
As the story you mentioned earlier
absolutely.
About UPS says. So it might not have been UPS themselves,
correct.
But it's the fellow employees.
Yep.
So you also have to watch out for that
yep.
as an employer. So we are very much on top of that. So we're trying to create a good culture at Epstein Group so
yeah.
everyone feels welcome. And we also do a lot of international work. So it's important for us to have that multi-ethnic background.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there are a lot of companies like yours. How many employees do you guys have?
50.
Yeah. So there's a lot of companies where, you know, you're forward thinking and you realize that not only is it good for your employees, but it's good for your business to cultivate that kind of environment. And I think I think the majority of people have the best intentions and are good hearted. I don't think, you know, people are all out there to get us or anything like that. But, you know, there are those pockets of, you know.
So last year I traveled in Saudi Arabia.
Okay, interesting.
And that was a whole other side of how women are treated in a society.
Absolutely.
What their position is. So I feel like we have come a very long way here in the United States.
Right. And I'm in total agreement with that. I think my only point is we just need to not take it for granted, perhaps. Not yet, you know. All right. I love lists. Dan knows I love lists. And I'm going to move this conversation from off of women a little bit to Atlanta focus so we can just segue right into Dan's updates. But a couple of lists, one that you will hate probably, and I just think it's funny. So, and one that's a little more good, a little more positive. So we'll do the positive one first, which is that Atlanta has been named a top 10 city for tech M&A activity. So tech mergers and acquisitions activity. Apparently, this is for 2012. So 2012, they're saying Atlanta was a top 10 city for private tech company acquisitions. This is a survey that was done by Privco's Private Tech Companies M&A Research Report. Who knew there was such a thing? In which they actually rank all the different metro areas. And it's interesting because we took the eighth spot coming in above Dallas and Houston. But what's really interesting is a couple of the Silicon Valley was leading the list. So some things are never going to change. But there were also a couple of areas that you think of as being leaders that didn't make the list, like Raleigh-Durham, which was a big research triangle tech hub. Not so much.
Not on there.
Not on there. And L.A. was on there. So also up and coming, I think, tech hub. So kind of interesting. And I think also San Diego was not and should have been, quote unquote. So anyway, kind of interesting because we have a lot of conversations on this station. Elizabeth gets to interview a lot of technology people.
A lot of people, leaders from tag and women in technology.
Right.
And sure, I mean, we talk constantly about the growing startup technology environment that's building here in Atlanta.
And often, correct me if I'm wrong, Elizabeth, but often as an underdog city.
From that point of view, feeling like the underdog city. So it looks like the dog has...
Right. We're not so under anymore. We're moving up. We're big dogs now.
We've just got incredible assets here, you know, with universities and existing companies. We were at the Midtown Alliance annual meeting last week, and of course there are sister organizations, Central Atlanta Progress and Midtown Alliance grew out of CAP, and you know a lot of what they talked about. Were you there, Dagmar, the Midtown's meeting? So they talked a lot about Georgia Tech and their partnerships with Emory and things that are going on right there, and you know just dozens and dozens of these like incubator kind of companies incubating smaller companies and partnering with each other. It's just amazing the kind of stuff that's going on like right under our nose here in Atlanta that just they don't get the Business Chronicle headlines that Coca-Cola and Home Depot do, but really they, you know, those companies, the Epstein Group type companies, you know, the 2 to 50 employee type companies. I mean, these are the companies that are really driving our city's economy. I mean, these are real and the future. Since I've been at CAP, I've really focused on these size companies. I mean, these are the people that I want to talk to. These are the members that I want to have in CAP because they're the people that are going to be, you know, they're the future. You know, the SunTrusts and the Home Depots and the Coca-Colas are going to be around, but they're not going to be more SunTrusts and Coca-Colas and Home Depots.
No.
You know, those they're here to stay, hopefully, but you know, what we really need is more Epstein's, you know, and more technology consortiums and collaborations with Georgia Tech, and you know that's really what's going to make Atlanta, you know, the place to be, going forward. Without that, you know, we're going to be kind of lost.
Well, and the interesting thing too is that companies of that size, and again, I know you can speak to this, Elizabeth, are the ones that want to give back. When they get to a certain point, I'm sure, I mean, Dagmar, it sounds like, I'm sure just without even knowing you that well, that you're one of these kind of people. We've had some technology leaders in here from relatively small companies who have been very successful at the level they're at and are still growing, who immediately turn around and say, I want to help the smaller companies. I want to help the kids right out of school. I want to have internships. I want to have, you know, all of those things. And so you're right. I mean, those kinds of companies, I think, keep that sector vibrant here. And it's quieter because they aren't the Home Depots and all of that. But it is right. It is really starting to build some good recognition.
It's sustainable.
And, yeah, it's sustainable.
What it is.
I like that word.
Right.
Yeah, we hire a lot of people out of school, like Georgia Tech or yep. Southern Tech. And I recently gave lectures at both of the schools as well on German innovation in the built environment. And a lot of students were very interested in that. What can be done with environment like photovoltaics, improved building envelope, better building systems, commission the systems so they run better. And we have had a lot of interest from students, and we hire a lot of them.
Yeah. All right, two more quick stories, and then I do want to get to Dan's update and learn more about Dagmar. I'm just running my mouth today, but I love these ones. These are great. One time, I think we were the sexiest city, and we were the – okay, well, now Forbes is ranking Atlanta 16th in the most miserable cities list. I know.
We'll get this stuff.
I know. It's like, really, who comes up with this? But I have to report it because I just love it so much. It's so silly. You could really come up with a list for anything, right? But right now, Forbes, and it's Forbes, so, you know, like, people take that seriously for some odd reason. Forbes ranks Atlanta 16th most miserable city in the U.S. And this is what they say. They say they examine a number of factors when evaluating this, the country's, they look at the 200 largest metro areas to determine this. And they include violent crime, unemployment, foreclosures, taxes, home prices, commute times, and weather.
Commute times. There it is again.
I know. They see more telecommuting, less sure. commute times.
Our okay. weather's pretty good.
That I know.
Should give us
Our
an
weather's
edge.
Good, and you know, I have to say, you look down that list, and I mean, Metro Atlanta. When you talk about the 20 county region, a lot of those things are pertinent. But let's be honest, a lot of that stuff is suburban.
Well, and also they do say you know, here
right.
those are issues that we just don't deal now. Crime, yes, we have crime in the city, but a lot of the growing crime numbers are growing in the suburbs. Right? And that's nationwide. That's a nation as is poverty. So those statistics nationwide are growing at the level of suburbs, and the cities are actually becoming more safer, more dense, you know, and more prosperous.
And I think
in many cases,
in fairness to us again here in Atlanta, I think that, and especially here in downtown, but just in Atlanta in general, they did say, I think what they did is they gave each of those criteria some kind of number value, and they, you know, came up with these numbers. And actually, what hurt us the most, and I think landed us on the list, was the housing crisis.
Yeah, sure.
Because it hit Atlanta especially hard.
Again,
so the foreclosure rate.
Again, that's mostly a suburban issue.
Yeah,
it was overbuilt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were entirely overbuilt. When you're building in places like, you know, Forsyth County and Paulding County, and you know the places right. that, you know, 20 years ago you would have never even, you know, thought to consider as a part of Metro Atlanta. And yeah, I mean, it was a absolute, you know,
a bubbling sprawl,
a glut of housing, and we'll be dealing with that for a long time as
right.
a region.
And in fairness, in town, I think the condo market really, there was a lot of foreclosures and short sales in the
sure.
condo market.
Yeah.
So guess what? I always like to make everyone do this too. So we were number 16. Guess what number one was? See if you can guess the worst, the most miserable city in
I looked at the list
all of America.
Already, so.
Yeah, no cheating,
Elizabeth. But I thought it was pretty obvious.
Midwest.
I did too. Not going to say.
Detroit.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah.
Poor
Two
Detroit.
For Dan.
I mean,
I know.
But look, hey, I always point to Detroit. A lot of positive things happening in Detroit, especially on the level of urban agriculture. And
poor Detroit.
Yeah, of course, poor Detroit. But, you know, if you talk to the mayor of Detroit and people that are actually, you know, moving into Detroit, Detroit's a lot of interesting things happening in Detroit.
Yeah, I have read about some interesting things.
I think Detroit may end up, at the end of the day, end up being an example of what we can do with a lot of these places that that are going to be derelict and blighted and you know, hey, it's like an addict, you know. You hit rock bottom and
yes.
And you
have nowhere to go
Detroit,
but up.
Detroit, I think, has definitely hit rock bottom in the last 5 years or 10 years, and maybe even before, going back to that. I mean, they've been suffering from the loss of manufacturing jobs for a long time, but you know, when you read a lot of what you read about Detroit right now is really interesting and positive. So Hopefully we can gain some lessons there.
Yeah, especially from the urban agriculture sure. and the small business initiatives in Detroit. I think Atlanta can learn a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to point out that even though we came in at number 16, higher on the list and therefore more miserable than us, not only Detroit, but also Chicago coming in at number 4 and New York City coming in at number 10. So we're not that bad, just saying.
Right.
All right. Last story, Dan, traffic related. Left lane slowpokes, target of proposed law. Seriously?
Get them.
Seriously? How many people have been behind somebody driving in the left lane who won't move over and you're just really frustrated?
I'm not the slow driver.
I'm not either. I'm the annoyed one. However, really, do we need a law for that? Come on. Come on. Don't we have more important things to do with our legislative time than make laws about slow drivers in the left lane?
Right.
Please.
Well, why don't they just increase the speed limit across the board?
But what they're saying is they actually want to make a law saying that if you're in the left lane, you have to drive at the max speed limit. And if you're not, you have to move. That seems ridiculous to me. Like, get some patience, people. You know, take a chill pill. It's just traffic. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
But our speed limits are what, like 55? On some
so
of
it's
the
not even gonna help.
Like highways.
Where is,
so, like, who's
here.
Driving?
In
Georgia.
Like the state? The state is looking at this?
Oh, please. I didn't look at it that carefully. It is the state, yes. Okay. It is the state.
That sounds like some political posturing.
It's silly, and you're right, because even if you're driving 55, you're still in the freaking way, because
right.
the people on the left lane are going 80.
Hopefully.
Yeah, so.
You have to go all the way to Alpharetta.
You talk about
if it's
in the
not going to take all day, I got
in the resource world, you know, when we talk about resources and using them wisely, we really need to lower speed limits. I mean, honestly, across the board, we need to lower speed limits.
Oh, boo.
Hey,
boo.
Look.
I'm from Germany. I
boo.
Like
speed limits. Yeah, boo.
I'm
going
to buy
need to lower speed limits. Hey, and we just need to not drive.
Well, that's a better one. And there that is go. Why I wanted to end with that so we could lead right into you and the transportation
so
updates.
Get out of the left lane and get on the MARTA train.
Get on the streetcar.
Get on the streetcar. So I was checking my Facebook this morning, and the mayor's head of transportation, his chief advisor on transportation, Tom Wyatt, is one of my Facebook friends, and he updated that the streetcar tracks are going in this morning.
That is so exciting.
I learned about that before I went in the office today, which I'm sure I would have heard about, but we knew that was imminent, and so tracks are track construction is now a thing. It's going on.
That is amazing.
So it's not just utilities being relocated. So now, you know, you can officially blame the Atlanta streetcar project for your traffic woes for the next year.
Now was the streetcar project responsible for the manhole cover thing that happened the other day?
I never heard one way or another on that.
Streets.
I don't think so. No, hearing where it was, I don't think so, but I could be wrong. I never heard one way or another on that because I think that was in the South CBD, a little bit further down south.
Okay. I'm just curious.
You know, hey, one thing leads to another. I don't know if it could have been, you know.
Right.
But it also happened on like Sunday, like I think a Sunday.
Yeah.
Construction was going.
Yeah, that was an odd thing. I wish I had seen it. Kind of could have been kind of cool to see.
Yeah,
just saying. Yeah. Manhole covers popping off and kind of like a
sci-fi
movie.
I don't think I was home when it happened. You know, you would think I'm so close to that I would have heard it if I was home.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of sci-fi movie esque, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay,
track
streetcar happening. No. Yeah, what else is going on?
Okay, so streetcar, of course, is a big deal.
So where are they starting the track?
I think they're starting actually over in Dagmar's neck of the woods. So they've done the utility relocation started out there on, I guess, the east side of the loop, and so now moving west side. And so you know, this is sort of generally speaking. I'm sure that our transportation planners would probably slap my hand for, you know, being this general, but generally speaking, the east side of the loop utility relocation has happened, and now the streetcar tracks will actually be laid, and then we'll kind of continue that progression moving west.
And so is the project on schedule at this point?
That's relative.
Okay.
We're on schedule. I think it is on schedule for the new schedule that we've established.
Which is so to be live 20, when?
2014, early 2014. Okay. We were at a certain point, you know, the hope was late 2013. But like, just like anything, I think Dagmar could tell you, in the building, construction, engineering world, things rarely happen right on time or early, though I'm sure that the Epson Group is great about making sure that happens right. as frequently as possible. But certainly when you get into the realm of major public infrastructure projects, things rarely happen right on schedule.
On the original timeline.
Yeah, on the original timeline. So, but we feel, I think, yeah, the feeling now is that early 2014 is definitely doable. And we've mentioned on this program before that, you know, 2014 is just a big year for downtown. You know, we're going to have opening of the National Civil and Human Rights. We're going to have the College Football Hall of Fame. We're going to have the streetcar. You know, just big stuff going on down here.
Right.
That'll be, you know, kind of long-lasting historic kind of projects.
And you guys have a big meeting coming up as well. Did you want to give us
annual meeting. You know, our president, AJ, I think is going to be on the program here in a few weeks, hopefully.
I think so.
And he'll give his take on it. But, you know, the annual meeting is our one big time to shine every year. And I mentioned Midtown's meeting that we just went to last week, and it was great. Their CEO banged on a trash can. He had a he's actually a drummer. So, you know, we got to figure out what instrument AJ is going to play.
Does he know this?
Yeah, he doesn't know. No, I think I'm going to give him some guitar lessons. We'll see.
There
so.
You go. You better hurry up.
But it's our big time to show off what's going on in downtown. This year, I think we're going to focus maybe a little bit more than we have in the past on CAP and less about downtown in general, but a lot about how the things that are going on around downtown, how CAP has been behind those things. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we miss opportunities to brag.
Yeah.
We like to kind of, you know, promote downtown and let downtown shine. But, at the encouragement of our board of directors, you know, a lot of them were kind of saying, you know, look, you guys do a lot of really incredible work. And a lot of these things, you know, these big things that are happening, a lot of people in the community don't realize that CAP is really, you know, either directly behind them or the catalyzing force behind the scenes that made them happen. And so we're going to be talking about, you know, specifically a lot about those things at the annual meeting this year. And that is March 28th at bright and early, breakfast starting at 7 a.m. And I can tell you, I went to the tasting yesterday for the food. We have one of the perks of being in the marketing department. We got to go taste the food, and it is going to be awesome. So come for the food, if nothing else, because it's going to be great. So 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., we'll have breakfast, reception, networking, great time to network. And then the program will start at 8, go to 9:30. And we've got some pretty cool stuff planned for that. And when we were sitting on the about to start the show, we heard you guys talking to Ann Kramer,
right,
from IBM, retiring from IBM, and we are going to be honoring Ann with the Dan Sweat Award, which is a really prestigious award for us. It's our most prestigious award we give. Dan Sweat was longtime president of Central Atlanta Progress and kind of one of these people that just sort of, you know, made very big things happen and was sort of kind of at the center of a lot of things for a long time for downtown and the city. And Anne is going to receive that award for her lifetime of amazing achievements.
Hopefully it wasn't supposed to be a surprise because you just blew it.
No.
I saw it announced.
We've got her kids coming and we've got the whole thing. Yeah, everybody's all in. So, nice. And then we'll also be giving an award to Dr. Cliff Kuhn, who's at Georgia State. He's going to receive the Turner Downtown Community Leadership Award. So that'll be a pretty good thing because he's a professor that does a lot about history and talks a lot about the history of downtown. So,
and is the meeting open to the public, or how does that work?
Definitely. It's for the general public. It's $100 a ticket. For CAP members, $75. If you want to get a row, it's $700. So
gotcha.
Get a little more price break.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we will again have AJ on a little bit later, a little closer to the meeting to talk more about it. And any other quick CAP updates before we focus all of our attention on Dagmar?
I think that's where our focus is right now. Streetcar and annual meeting. I don't think we have time to focus on much more, though we kind of are.
How's your personal life going?
Well, I got my car back, but it's been in a state of disrepair. So
you're still not driving. Really?
I'm not driving much, which is great. I love it.
All right, I'm disappointed that you have a car. That makes me sad because you were like, "No car, Dan."
I always owned it. It just wasn't in my possession.
Well, that's close enough. And now I'm disillusioned and I'm very disappointed. I'm gonna ruin my day. Dagmar, you're so patient over there. And
thank you.
I appreciate your comments on all these, women in business issues. But I really want to find out more about, both your company and also some of these public initiatives that you're a part of. So jump right in and tell us a little bit about Epstein Group.
So we are a multidisciplinary company, Epstein Group, and we are actually at the streetcar line. We are at the eastern end of the loop on Edgewood Avenue and Jackson Street. So we're very excited to have the streetcar coming to our front door in 2014 now. And we are also part of another initiative with Central Atlanta Progress, which is the Better Buildings Challenge. We are in a very energy efficient building. We renovated it. We moved in about 2 years ago after a long renovation, actually 10 months. So we did pretty good, I think.
That is good, actually.
Yes. And it's 41% more efficient than the standard. And we have LEED Platinum and 4 Green Globes. And we are now participating in the Better Buildings Challenge to make it even more energy efficient by 2020. So 20% more energy efficient. So we are very interested in helping other building owners as well with their energy efficiency goals. And we are also very involved in the community where we are in making buildings more revitalized, like some of them are historic structures. And we are getting the National Trust for Historic Preservation interested in the community. They did a study and they will announce some funding opportunities. So it's a great area to be in, and we're very happy to be part of downtown Atlanta. Right now, I think it's 70 buildings that are signed up for the Better Buildings Challenge. So there is a citywide movement now for making buildings more energy efficient. So our services take a big role in that.
Over 50 million square feet now of space that's been up for audits and will be, part of this effort to reduce by 20% by 2020. It's just amazing numbers. And that's like growing. I mean, every time I get it, it's like every month. It's like going up by.
I have a silly question. You said 70 feet. Buildings are in the challenge now. Out of how many?
Oh, how many buildings in Atlanta?
Yeah. Like approximately.
Gosh, yeah. No, I wouldn't be the person I would love to have Lauren DeFort, who runs the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge programs for us on behalf of the city.
Because I guess I'm wondering what qualifies. That, but, you know what I mean? Is
right.
it five stories?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're looking at commercial buildings now, right. But this is an effort that's a part of a broader national effort with the U.S. Department of Energy. So,
right.
I'm sure we're kind of working on their standards, but I think commercial buildings are the focus right now. But gosh, as Dagmar could tell you, I'll talk all day, I'm sure, about ways that you can make other types of buildings, houses, and other places more efficient. And
well, the reason I asked that question is because I wanted to sort of, dig in a little bit to this, Dagmar. 70 buildings is great, but there's a lot more than that, right? So I guess what I'm wondering is when building owners are looking at this stuff, I think, the obvious question is this just going to be too cost prohibitive? Or I'm not even going to bother because I don't have the money to spend to improve my building. Is that what you come across?
Right. A lot of people are concerned that it costs them a lot of money and that they don't see the savings soon enough.
Yeah.
So we start with a lot of simple measures such as lighting improvements and controls improvements. And then we look at the mechanical systems. We also look at the building envelope. Building envelope, an easy retrofit is to re-roof the building. So with new roofing, you can add insulation. So frequently that's step two for us. Like after lighting controls, we do the roof. And then we do the mechanical systems. We might do some other things with the building envelope. And then there are also incentives still in place for photovoltaics. And so we frequently put lightweight photovoltaics on the roof, and they contribute maybe between 5 and 10% of the building's energy consumption to the building as well. So overall, we can get buildings easily 10 to 20% more efficient, and you should see a savings within a couple of years, on at least on some of the initial benefits, initial investments. You should get a return on the investment within a couple of years.
So I know we've talked about this stuff before on the air here, Elizabeth, and I think it's really important to get that word out, because I think, you know, again, it's just, I think people have it in their mind that it's just going to be money up front and they just can't bother with it. And I think getting out that message that it actually does provide savings over the long run, you'll get your money back, and then ultimately hopefully have higher profits, for example, if you're renting space or whatever, because, you know, you're saving money on some of your overhead. So, I mean, I think we all sort of know it's the right thing to do, and we know it's good, and that we, quote unquote, should do it. But I think it's really easy to say, too expensive, can't bother. So companies like yours are sort of there to lead the way and do things like that, gently sort of guide people in step by step, so they don't have to like feel like they're tearing the whole building apart to make it happen.
Yeah, and you frequently, we start with an energy audit, and then we do what's called retro commissioning. So we look very closely at the building systems, and then we fine-tune them, so we make sure that people are very comfortable and the building runs as energy efficient as it can be.
Yeah. It's going to be more and more and more important, I think, right, as the years go by. I mean, it's just people need ways to save. There's less resources available, et cetera, et cetera.
So. Dagmar, your company, in addition to doing a lot of work here in the city of Atlanta, your portfolio also spans the globe. So
that's
you've
correct.
Done projects all over the world. What's your take on how the U.S. is trending relative to other areas of the world like China, India, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, some of these other places, mm-hmm. in terms of sustainable architecture?
Well, we have done work in 50 countries. So Epson Group is very much involved with LEED and energy assessments, energy modeling. And one of the projects that we are currently working on is in Switzerland. It's a very large facility close to the airport. And also we're working on other projects in Germany. We are starting to get work in the Middle East. And we have done work in other countries as well. So what we have found, and that's why I'm highlighting Switzerland and Germany, that there's a lot of innovation in those two countries right now, and the economy is pretty good. So we see major investments in buildings, and we see systems that we're not familiar with, like they have fiberglass curtain walls, and they have very large district geothermal systems, and their photovoltaics, they have them integrated into the building facade. They have double skin facades, double skin envelopes to the buildings. And so these are very exciting concepts to us. They use also a lot of thermal energy, like they use the solar collectors to generate heat, but they use the heat also again to create cooling. So some of the technologies that we are not seeing in this country. And so it's very exciting for us to work on the optimization of these buildings with these new technologies. And so we see an opportunity to bring the building industry in this country up to the same standard and to improve energy efficiency as well here with these new ideas.
Excellent. And leveraging that.
What kind of what will it take to bring some of that technology here?
I think it needs committed building owners.
Yeah.
Like what we find right now is they're still holding back, even if they see that they can get the investment back within a year. And what we see that in Europe, a lot of people have a little bit more long-term thinking, even in their whole business strategies. We see people that might have like a 10 or 20 year business plan. Like a lot of people here, they don't even have a 3-year business plan. So
they have a throw it against the wall and see if it sticks plan.
Very true.
How was your last quarter and can you do better next quarter?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Part of being a younger country.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe more strategic thinking. I think we need more strategic thinking. Like at Epson Group, we do a lot of meetings on strategic planning. Like we usually try to at least project 3 years out. Right now I had a plan until 2020, which is also the Better Buildings Challenge year. So we try to think ahead. And I think if CEOs and building owners have that long-term vision, what do they want to do with their building? Where are they headed? I think the logical choice is to make some investments in the into the building because it improves their asset value, so they can resell the building at a higher value. They can retain tenants now. They can attract tenants. They look better than their other building owner competitors.
Yes.
So why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah. What is the way, how does this word get spread? How do people find out, aside from you coming on wonderful shows like this and talking about it, are there forums? Are there conferences? Are there things where these, you know, kind of building owners are where you can sort of get that word out? Or how does that work?
Well, being part of the Better Buildings Challenge, we're actually planning on inviting some of the building owners to our own facility and to have like a round table to discuss that. And we don't have a date set, but I think we're going to have it in May of this year because it takes some planning.
Yeah.
We might pull it off a little bit earlier. So if you go to our website, we'll announce it there, epstongroup.com. If you're part of the Better Buildings Challenge now, that's one vehicle how you can find out. Then we are very active in the U.S. Green Building Council. We think that's also a good effort.
Yeah. There's a lot of organizations, I think, right? I mean, that are sort of dealing with sustainability and all of the type of stuff mm-hmm. that you're talking about. Again, I do think everyone sort of knows that they should be doing this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of making that, taking that first step and saying, okay, now I'm going to act on what I know I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big thing is seeing that there is a long-term benefit. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you hear now is just how many people are actually looking at their bottom lines and realizing, wow, this, you know, this really matters, you know, to our, you know, to our bottom line, to our, you know, to our long-term viability as a business. And so we hope that continues to happen so that businesses like Epstein continue to make our environment better and really kind of strengthen our placement, at least as a city. We're leading with the Better Buildings Challenge. We want to be seen as a national leader on this stuff.
I think your generation too, whatever you, millennials, Gen Ys, whoever you are. I think
I'm going to change the name to Business Radio Y, by the way.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Let's do that. And then you'll just take over my seat.
Yeah.
Perfect. I think that there's, you know, as these smaller companies, this, you were talking about the 2 to 50 person companies who don't typically own buildings, right, are leasing space, whether it be, you know, warehouse space or office space or whatever it is, that as, because they're aware of this need to be sustainable and, you know, environmentally sound and all of those things, that hopefully they'll start to push, as you said, on the business. They'll look for spaces to lease that are built with, you know, to LEED certification standards and with all of those energy savings put in for their own savings, but also just because that's what they want.
Right.
Just like they want a cool looking space in a cool place for a good price, they also want a green building.
Yeah, Epstein Group works on a lot of interior spaces as well. There is actually a program for that, LEED for Commercial Interiors.
Okay.
And you can commission that facility as well, even if it's just half of a floor, and you can have a LEED plaque in that space as well.
You know, that's good to know because I've worked for companies who have like said, oh, we're going to be environmentally sound and we're going to do that by putting recycling bins in the office. And all they do is put in like a bunch more plastic bins that are like very unclear about what's supposed to go in which bin. And all it does is confuse me. And there's no actual certification. I don't know what light bulbs are. I don't know anything else about it, except all of a sudden there's more plastic bins around. And suddenly I'm supposed to do, as the employee, something different that I don't understand.
Yeah. And we also write policies. So Epstein Group has some standard policies, but then we customize them. So this is a good waste management policy, or this is a good landscaping policy.
Right.
So, or cleaning policy, like some people, they use really harsh chemicals in the interior spaces, and then people, they get the flu, and then other people get ill, and then sometimes it's hard to differentiate when you have like a respiratory illness,
right,
whether you're still congested or whether now you're reacting to the chemicals in the environment and the illness prolongs. So in our own office space, we're very careful to use the right cleaning products, for example.
Yeah.
So this is something else we can look out for in our spaces.
So do you have programs that are like for all size companies?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're working on, I think it's a 2 million square foot building. And then we're also working on some smaller buildings. So we work on buildings on all sizes.
Okay.
For example, we worked on Technology Square here in Atlanta, the three city blocks in Midtown. And then we worked on the three office towers at Atlantic Station. So we worked with them, and they all have LEED plaques.
Gotcha. Very cool. And so you said the website was EpsteinGroup.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So people, companies of all sizes who want to get this stuff right need to call Dagmar or go to the website at least and see what services they offer.
That's right. And we want to congratulate Dagmar once again because just this month she was elevated to the College of Fellows of the American Institute of Architects, which is a really big deal.
And the only woman in Atlanta, right?
Thank you.
To be at that level.
Georgia,
so,
right?
Well, that was elevated this year.
That was elevated this year.
So they elevate people every year. And this year was two people from Georgia, myself and another architect. And the reason I received it was because I diversified my practice from the traditional architectural practice. So when I created Epson Group, I always had the vision that it's just not architecture for new buildings. But I wanted to provide services for the entire life cycle of a building. So from initial construction until hopefully deconstruction, not just demolition, at the end of the life cycle. And so there are going to be various renovations during the life cycle. And you also have to look at the operations so that the building is very energy efficient, very water efficient, and it's very healthy during the operation. And with that vision for serving the entire life cycle of the building and serving the owners and the tenants, the occupants, with that vision, I created a firm where I have various departments. So we have the department, we have a lot of engineers, and they provide the energy auditing and the retro commissioning to make the buildings run very smoothly. Then we have a department that does green building certifications, because we often find that the policies, they are very well aligned with green building certifications. And then we do a lot of energy modeling also, so while the building is being built or when the building has been built and is going through renovation, you can also optimize what you're going to do by predicting the savings with an energy model. So you can actually prioritize, like, this is what you should do first. So you can calculate it ahead of time. So do the energy modeling. And then we do a lot of services that other firms might provide as well, but now we do them with that knowledge. So we provide a unique package, like we provide interior design, we provide architecture, we provide mechanical engineering design, we provide planning, we provide landscape services. For example, we worked on landscape services on Boulevard, which is in our community as part of the Yo Boulevard movement by Kwan Sahal.
Yeah.
So we are very versatile with what we do, but the overall vision is high performance, sustainability, make the facility run better for the environment and for your people. So that's what Epson Group is about.
And I like the full life cycle idea. I mean, that's something you don't often hear. I think with a lot of, you know, companies sort of come in at the beginning, build the building, and you never see them again, you know? Or, I mean, the idea of thinking about a building all the way through deconstruction is sort of
cool.
Interesting. Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story with us and your story with us and for all your participation in the Atlanta area and the projects. And congratulations again. It is very cool to be the only woman in Georgia elevated this year. We like that. It was a perfect topic today with all the women-centric conversation. So thank you for participating. And Dan, sorry. Again.
No need to apologize.
I apologize. I do. Anyway, because poor Dan gets sucked into my madness every time he comes in here. Elizabeth, any final thoughts?
Fun times. Good show, Dana. Thanks so much. I think that about wraps it up.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, both of you. And thanks to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to BusinessRadioX.com, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. Stay tuned for more great shows here on Business Radio X.